Hi, welcome to Quantum of Solace with Al Smith and David Robertson of the Solace Centre for Public Christianity. David, you're back in the studio, your arm's still in a sling, but you're fighting fit and ready to go, and there's lots in the news this week.
A soul kick, a soul kick, these good misses a soul kick, an apple, a pear, a plum or a cherry, any good thing to make us all merry. Soul kick, a soul kick, these good misses a soul kick, one for Peter, two for Paul, and three for him that made us all.
Decision has come in from the appeal court in Northern Ireland on the Asher's bakery case.
For those who don't know the story, and we've got links to it, so basically we're not going to go through the whole story again. I want to comment on one particular aspect, but the decision itself was that Asher's have been found guilty of breaching discrimination law by refusing to bake a cake with a message on it which says support same-sex marriage. There are two reactions to it that I think are worthy of comment. The first comes from our old friend Peter Tatchell.
Asher's Bakery did not refuse to serve Gareth Lee because he was gay. They had previously served him and said they'd be happy to serve him again. His sexuality has nothing to do with the case at all. What this case is about is whether they should be compelled by law as a baker to put a message on a cake with which they disagreed. Now, I believe that discrimination against people is always wrong, but discrimination against ideas is legitimate in a free, open, democratic society. So even though I totally disagree with Asher's Bakery in their opposition to marriage equality, they believe the law should discriminate against gay couples. The law should not allow people who love one another, if they're of the same sex, to get married. I disagree with that, but I think in a free society, they have a right to say they don't want to put a pro-gay message on their cake. And of course, the appeal court ruling yesterday opens up a can of worms. It would effectively mean that a gay baker could be compelled by law to put anti-gay messages on a cake, or other facility and service providers could be required by law to put sexist or xenophobic messages on cakes.
Peter has come to realise that actually this decision has massive implications for freedom of speech, freedom of conscience within Northern Ireland at present, but I mean it has persuasive value with the other legal jurisdictions within the UK.
Yes,
it's not binding
precedent
on them, but it's a precedent in a neighbouring jurisdiction that will have an impact. The judges in Northern Ireland seem to be falling over themselves to prove how right on they were.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think what Tatchell identifies is the number one problem, because here we have a government telling people the messages that they must proclaim. Now, this is not about protecting individuals or groups from discrimination. This is about protected belief. One of the most astonishing reactions came from Stonewall in Scotland, who on Radio Scotland said that they supported the judgment, but that if a gay baker was asked to bake a cake which said oppose same-sex marriage, they had the right to refuse.
Well, Catherine, you've already kind of rejected that argument, but Peter has thrown in another interesting one. You know, somebody goes to a gay baker and says, I want a cake that says gay marriage is wrong. And in the context of Northern Ireland, where that is a political issue and gay marriage is still very much a matter of debate, equal marriage is a matter of debate, then obviously there are people who hold that view. So would a gay baker then be compelled to make this cake that says equal marriage is wrong?
I don't think that would necessarily be the case. I think, it would very much depend on the grounds for which the cake was refused, and also the grounds for, the exact slogan that was being used, and many, many other factors.
Well, equal marriage is wrong. That's the slogan.
If a gay baker, for example, refused service on the grounds that it was a religious slogan, then of course the equality legislation would apply. But if they refused service on the basis that it was an offensive slogan, or something that, was deliberately attacking LGBT people, then they wouldn't be wrong. I mean, I think it's very
much. So I'm asking you specifically, if someone went into a known gay baker's and said, I want you to bake a cake with gay marriage is wrong on it.
I don't believe that that would be covered by this legislation, but of course I'm not a lawyer.
What do you mean? Do you think that would be permissible or not?
I think they would be within their rights to refuse to make that cake on the basis that it's you know, a slogan that would be attacking LGBT people.
I want all my cake and eat it.
I think the thing that disturbed me even more, much, much more, I expect the world to be insane, although it's good to have occasional voices of sanity like Peter Tatchell's at times. Common grace works through. But it's in the supposedly Christian world that, I'm sorry, with a good Scottish phrase, gives a book. It almost made me feel physically ill.
The number of comments I've seen condemning the Asher's Bakery for refusing to ice this message, this political message, is staggering. It's really disappointing, actually.
Here's an interesting thing. People who call themselves liberal Christians, or how shall we put it, especially ex-evangelicals, and they're all about being nice and loving and so on. And then you get Christian magazines and Christian things say, well, these are different opinions and so on. Actually, they don't allow different opinions. Here's what happens. For example, Dave Tomlinson, who's famous for writing things like post-evangelical and the bad Christian and so on, he posted on his Facebook site, he actually said about the Ashers, and this just, it really annoyed me. He said, it's good to see narrow-minded bigots being defeated. And he's saying that about his Christian brothers and sisters. Now, it's interesting. When I challenged him on that, that comment was removed. I wasn't rude. I wasn't impolite. But when I challenged him on it, the whole thing was completely removed.
There's some strange positions within Christianity on this issue. No wonder the outside world is confusing when within the church, it's such an unclear sound. It's such a mess. There's so many different voices talking unbiblical. We have a standard by which we can measure these things, we can measure the truth, and it's getting cast aside and ignored.
Absolutely. And what they've done is they've just given up. Steve Chalk, for example, has moved miles away from any form of biblical Christianity, and he's just announced proudly to the world he's going to have his first transgender naming ceremony. Yeah, and this is becoming the great battleground, if you like, of our culture. Although you look at it and you think, how much of this is parody? How much of this? It almost cannot be real. And yet it's what happened. So you're getting Jeremy Corbyn, for example, wants the Labour Party to enforce in its policy that you'll have an LGBT History Month in schools, in which pupils will be taught such wonderful facts as Florence Nightingale was lesbian and Isaac Newton was gay. Yeah.
There is a Christian reaction which says, can we not just get past this issue of sexuality, of transgender, of the whole issue of human sexuality and get on with preaching the gospel? What's the problem with that?
What's wrong with it is that we preach the gospel to human beings, and we've got to ask, what is a human being? This is being used to undermine the gospel. It's being used to try and recreate man in a particular image, not in the image of God. The gospel is preached to human beings made in the image of God. And I think that's important for it.
No matter how far we go down this road in terms of trying to suppress that image of God, the good news is that no matter how marred it is, no matter how obscured it is something that is always there. So when we do preach the gospel, even through this as an issue, we can leave it with God, and the gospel will do the work that God intends it to do. People are made in the image of God. They can't escape that reality.
Yeah, they are. They are made in the image of God. And I think that's what's involved here. I mean, and that's a huge part of it. I think the other thing is simply this, that you can use issues like this to preach the gospel. They're not the be-all and the end-all, but I think the destruction of humanity is quite important. And that is what is going on here. This is the remodeling of humanity. It's the remaking of humanity. And it's not going to stop with this.
We all hanging by a thread, cutting at the wires. Ignorant that all the sin lead to hellfire. And when I yell fire, they tell me false alarm. Cause they don't smell the smoke, and they don't sense the harm. Something worse than the black plague's coming, and nothing under the sun to save us from it. There's no hope but divine intervention, and Christ saves victims who are dying from addiction. Here is my moment, here is my lifetime. All that I have, I will give to you in this moment, cause nothing really matters at all. And everything that this heart longs for, other than you, I will let die. Take all that I am. Nothing really matters right now.
For example, we have another item of news about the Dutch and euthanasia. Here's how this whole argument goes. Euthanasia, people say, what's the harm? This is people who are really suffering and they're dying anyway. They're going to be dead within 6 months. Let's get this passed.
That's the argument that is used to get euthanasia in the door. And then once it's in the door, it automatically suffers from what we would call in other areas mission creep. These rights to assisted suicide are extended, usually by very hard, very emotional cases. It's my favourite phrase in the world, a salami tactic, slice by slice, over a period of time, you reach the point where in the Netherlands now, you can apply to have an assisted suicide if you just feel that your life is no longer worth living. So it's no longer about if you have a terminal condition, it is if you just feel that your quality of life is no longer what you would wish it to be. You know, if you're depressed, if you're heartbroken, that you can't go on.
Yeah, and you say, my life is complete. I mean, yeah. It's almost hard to know where to begin with both the inanity and the evil of it. Yet it's just simply a case of saying, we told you so. So with that, with the transgender, with the euthanasia, we're seeing these kinds of things that are ongoing in our culture and in our society.
I will be kind, won't be so cruel. I will be sweet, I will be true. The pains of love you'll quickly learn. I soon to heat and quick to burn. I got a brand new set of rules, because I am your brand new fool. I got a brand new set of rules I got to learn.
Speaking of death, well, we had a couple of people we want to mention who died.
Jack Chick. If you're of a certain age, I've only been a Christian for about 6 years, so I didn't really have any experience of Jack Chick tracts, but they're pretty infamous. A lot of people will remember them. Very pre-millennial dispensationalist. They had a very particular view of theology within them. You know, let's hunker down and wait for the rapture to come and get us.
Well, they were even more than that. I mean, I used to find them, even as a kid, I found them horrifying. I'm amazed that people gave them out as tracts. There's classics, you know. It's not just Catholics who are lost and go into hell, but Southern Baptists as well. You never actually got onto the Free Church, my own denomination or other Presbyterians. But I mean, it's such a shame, because in one sense, the idea is a really, really good idea. But sometimes, don't you think, Al, that we shoot ourselves in the foot by, dare I say it, being so sectarian? Is that the right word? Being so narrow-minded? You know, there's secondary issues on which we can disagree, and there can even be primary issues, I think, on which we can disagree.
But there are points on which you have to be absolutely rock solid. You know, for example, if you take the Book of Galatians, the Apostle Paul talking about the gospel, you add one thing to the gospel and you know, he anathematized them. So we've got to be sounding a strong, clear voice on what the gospel is. I mean, that's an issue that you cannot fudge.
People, there's a train a-coming. Don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to induce a homing. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. Yeah.
Another person who's died, we will leave Mr. Chick, we will move across the world to a billionaire who was the world's longest serving monarch, who I will try and pronounce his name, Buhimbol Adulegye. And if I apologise to all our Thai listeners if I've got that wrong, he became king in 1946. He died aged 88. What I think is significant about his death is that Thailand is a very unstable country.
Well, he came in when it was unstable and he provided a lot of stability throughout his reign.
It's interesting how he did that, because he continued to provide the mystique. And it's interesting what will happen. I noticed that his son has asked not to take over for another year, mm-hmm. which again is an interesting one. One sort of side thing of this, did you know that you go to jail for 15 years if you insult the royal family in Thailand?
I noticed you're being very guarded in the language that you're using here.
Well, yeah, for when I visit Thailand. But I mean, you can insult the royal family here.
And many do.
In the United Kingdom. That's what we call freedom of speech. And that brings us back round to the Ashers thing, because I am very, very concerned about the lack of freedom of speech.
Change my way of thinking, make myself a different set of rules. Gonna change my way of thinking, make myself a different set of rules. Gonna put my good foot forward, stop being influenced by fools.
Talking of speech, Bob Dylan's just been awarded last week before, the Nobel Prize for Literature for his outstanding contribution to the American Songbook.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with getting the Nobel Prize for Literature. I love the fact that they've tried to contact him and he hasn't answered them. I love it. I love Bob Dylan. I love so, so many of his lyrics, not just when he went through that Christian period. I mean, I think Every Grain of Sand still has to be one of the greatest songs ever written.
The times are changing. That was prophetic.
Well, it was. I mean, and in fact, what we've been talking about on this podcast, you know, come
is
gather around people wherever you roam, admit that the waters around you have grown, except you move soon, you'll be drenched to the bone. For, you know, the times, they are changing. They are.
We're living downwind of that now. And actually, we're sort of 3-4 generations past it. So what we see now in our society are the fruits of the changes that were implemented at that time.
We are seeing that. And I think it's very sad. However, Bob Dylan has been surpassed this week by somebody else. And I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, listeners, your homework for this week. There is a new album out from Leonard Cohen, and it almost sums up everything we've been talking about this week. You Want It Darker? It's a very interesting album. It's a man who is contemplating his own death.
It is a brilliant, brilliant album. I mean, brilliant. I can't describe how brilliant it is. I mean, instantly, I have Leonard Cohen's albums. When the new one comes out, it's just automatic. It gets sent to me. I have them on order, and it is really, really superb.
If you are the dealer, I'm out of the game. If you are the healer, means I'm broken and lame. If thine is the glory, then mine must be the shame. You want it darker, we kill the flame. Magnified, sanctified be thy holy name. Vilified, crucified in the human frame. A million candles burning for the help that never came. You want it darker. I'm ready, my lord.
Okay, a lot of darkness, a lot of darkness. Let's finish with something that's a wee bit light, and it doesn't sound like light. Let's go to Mosul and ISIS. Again, as we talk, the battle for Mosul is ongoing. Not as easy as some people had anticipated. But if you want to know why it's important, then look at this clip. It is of an Iraqi Christian priest returning to one of the oldest Christian villages in the world, returning to his house and seeing some of his 4,000 books and going into his wee church.
We walk towards Father John's church, fearing the worst. There are bullet holes in the cross, which has been burnt.
This is the church.
This is the church.
There is no way from here. This is the church. Look at the church.
Look at the wall of the church. It's been hit by who knows what.
Yeah, this is my church.
In the Old Testament, God spared Nineveh from destruction. The Church of St. Miriam is still here, but only just.
Come on, man. They have no doctrine, no God. They don't know God. They will do every bad thing. What can we do?
Do you think you will come back to this church?
Of course.
Really?
Of course I will come.
What, rebuild it?
We will make it well.
Yeah.
We will change everything.
We can hear gunfire and airstrikes, so we help this couple rescue as many books as they can and leave quickly. The Christians of Bartella, 2,000 years of history behind them, but according to Father John, this story is not quite finished yet, and the next chapter is about to begin.
I found it really, really moving. I found it moving in the same way as I heard a clip of a Gregorian chant that was sung to the Pope, which was sung by Georgian and Iraqi Christian refugees.
It's a rendition of Psalm 50 sung in Aramaic.
Yeah, and just hearing it sung, it just, oh my goodness, you, it's so extraordinarily beautiful. And it just, I think it reminds us, doesn't it? It's just a very simple thing. ISIS, the progressives, everyone, they're all attacking and seeking to destroy Christ and his church and the image of God in man. They won't succeed. They just won't
succeed. Ultimately, they can't.
No, the gates of hell will not prevail. And with that, we leave you with that wonderful thought and just rejoice that Christ is king and he is going to build his church and he is going to work things out even through his enemies.
We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge and oddly enough, but makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it, or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens, trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.